Check engine, ABS, or maintenance light on? Take the guesswork out of your warning lights with O'Reilly Veriscan. The service is free and provides a report with solutions verified by ASE-certified master technicians. And if you need help, we could recommend a shop for you. Ask for O'Reilly Veriscan today.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, children of all ages, welcome to the episode number 14 of the 1973 podcast. I'm here with the best tag team in the podcasting business, my two buddies, Tom, Ed. Guys, what's going on? We know that you guys got some stuff in the works. We've got big things going on. We've got a lot to talk about, playoff hockey, some other stuff. What's new this week, guys? Anything?
Not much.
Just watching some NHL playoffs, man. Great games. I couldn't stay up and watch the other one the other night. Four OTs, man. That's a long game. You know, so it's been exciting so far. You know, just like the overtime winner today too. So you know, big time stuff.
Before we get rolling with all these different things we want to talk about, let's start with how we usually start with our first segment. Ed reads emails. Ed, what do you got this week? It's a good one.
All right,
one.
Man. This one is from me and Gene from Oakland, California. All right. You know, hopefully we can have a little bit more than a cup of coffee in the big time. Okay. So here we go. Here's the question. Hey guys, in your opinion, what is the greatest secondary wrestling title in history? Great show. I listen every Monday in my car on the way to work. Gene, Oakland, California. Gene, thanks a lot, brother. We really appreciate you listening to us, and thanks for the insightful question. I'm gonna flip this one right to Andy first, because this is like the biggest meatball going down. So, brother, take it away.
So this is like a deep dive, radio. There's a lot of ways you can look at this. There's been a lot of titles in the territories that have been like stepping stones to other things, but this is the way I'm gonna present this one. There's, out of all those secondary titles, there's only two titles left standing. There's the Intercontinental title, big history on that, and the U.S. title. To me, everything else goes by the wayside, as much as there's some really good secondary titles. What I want to bring up is it comes down to those two, and it's basically split in hairs. Is the Intercontinental title the biggest secondary title or the U.S. title? In my opinion, in the history of the wrestling business, I'm going to have to go the Intercontinental title just because of the amount of guys. I don't want to knock that U.S. title, but I think the most important secondary title in the history of wrestling, because what's left standing is the Intercontinental title. You can go down a laundry list. I know sometimes it was passed around, certain guys got it, and it was but at one time it was the working man's title. It was the guy that was the gatekeeper for the next level of, are you ready to be in the world title picture for the WWEF, WWWF? That's my pick. I'm going to go Intercontinental title. If prove me wrong. Tommy, what do you got?
I absolutely agree with you, the IC belt. And it had lost its luster over the last, probably 5-10 years, but I kind of like what they're doing right now with it, with Gunther, and they're kind of building it up, making it mean more. And I just think it really, like you said, it's more of a matter of what you were more of a fan of, WWE or NWA or WCW. And I totally agree. I mean, you've got like Pedro Morales, Pat Patterson. I mean, you've got the Honky Tonk Man, even though I hated him as a wrestler. I mean, the guy was great on the mic. He was great with everything that you want in a wrestler.
Yeah, but Tommy, But with Honky Tonk Man, he did exactly what he was supposed to do. You just said it yourself. You couldn't stand him. So yeah. His stick worked, right? Sorry, yep. Go ahead.
No, you're right. That's all I got.
So all right, this, well, before I end, hold that thought, because I want to get you, I want you to get a good rant on this one. But Tom, this would have been a great time for you to bust out your IC belt just for get it on camera. It would have been great. Just, you could have just showed it up, lifted it up. And
I'm not even mentioning who you're. I know where your mind's going. I'm not even mentioning him because of that.
I would have done the same thing, but I'm holding off. I got one to show in a few minutes when we get to another segment. But go ahead, Ed. Finish your thoughts.
I'm going to have to say I'm going to go with the Intercontinental belt. I mean, it hands down. I mean, because you look at the guys. Like, look, even if you really truly enjoyed watching WCW or NWA, you have to admit the guys that Vince put in at the Intercontinental belt, they were great. They could cut great promos. I mean, just look at Macho Man. You can pull like three just great promos that he cut going into WrestleMania 3, you know? So, I mean, I'm going to have to go with that. I mean, that's not diminishing, you know, the U.S. title. I mean, one of my personal favorites is the World Television title. I mean, you know, the man held it for a long time, you know? So it's kind of one of those things. I mean, it's just kind of one of those ones that you don't quite remember if you weren't quite there, you know? So,
yeah.
All right, Andy, yeah. Kicking it back to you, brother.
Just deep dive with the two belts. Well, if we're going to, you know, keep it at those two titles, you're forgetting like Ken Patera held that belt before, you know, pre Hulkamania area when people started really watching. I mean, Don Morocco had it. You know, like Tom said, Pedro, Pat Patterson, the first one in that mock whatever tournament that they had in Rio de Janeiro, which was total BS, but it sounded good on TV at the time. Tito Santana, he was really over at one time. Greg Valentine, you know, Savage. The list goes on and on. Ultimate Warrior, Rick Rude. I'm doing pre-1990. I mean, we're talking about all Hall of Famers, all of them, all Hall of Famers. Yes.
Agreed.
So it was, it was the working man's belt. And I think the guy that really, you know, carried it like a real champion was when Savage got it. He almost carried it like it was a world title. So, every interview he did, unlike Hogan, he was carrying it and showing it and like, you know, trying to make it mean something, a little bit of psychology for the fans or whatever. So, you know, as far as to answer the question in a roundabout kind of way, well, I can't believe all three of us are unanimous on that, but IC title. So we're gonna stay kind of talking wrestling, and there was a passing this week. And this one was huge, huge, huge for me. Superstar Billy Graham was my entry level into pro wrestling. Probably 1977, I actually went back and talked to the Phantom and told him that I found what I thought was my initial 4-year-old me watching the first episode that I can remember. And it was, the story was watching cartoons. Cartoons lopped over into wrestling. I had never seen it before, and was a Superstar Billy Graham promo. I still remember my dad was sitting in the chair in back of me laughing, and I was just like mesmerized at the promo. And he was a bad guy at the time, and I was just in awe of who is this guy. And he looked like something, as they would say years later, larger than life persona. And hooked me right in, and my love of wrestling started from 77 on, and never really, you know, there's been peaks and valleys in the watching, but that, you know, that guy was the entry level guy for me. And man, when I was small, he was huge. And, you know, I didn't know, you know, it never struck me that he was a bad guy. I mean, he was just something to watch. It was like, you know, watching something like Star Wars or an Evel Knievel jump. It was like huge. It was huge for me. And on that thought, speaking of secondary titles, I busted this one out. It's the old Florida heavyweight title. And what's cool about it is, years ago, I got Billy Graham to sign it. And it's from the Kevin Sullivan promo where they had him chained in the desert. It says, "I'll break the chains that bind me, Superstar Billy Graham." So as far as titles go and secondary titles go, that's one of them. But I just want to show off the Billy Graham thing because of how much of a big influence that guy was into, you know, wrestling, lifetime fan. And after that, it flourished. And, you know, it's a big loss in the wrestling community, because I don't think that guy gets as much credit as he should for being a sports entertainer before it was a thing. And, you know, Dusty Ventura, even Hulk Hogan, you know, they all stole from him. So thoughts, Ed, Tom, on the superstar?
I'm gonna say this is that, man, like rolling back through some of the stuff that I found on YouTube, man, dude, that dude could cut a promo, man. Like, I mean, he got you, you know, take a line from, you know, got you right in your mind, you know? And like, that sounds silly, but, you know, when you think about how we grew up, like, man, we didn't have 300 channels of shit on TV to watch. I mean, we had very limited stuff to watch. And this was, you know, entertaining. And like, to have guys that had that charisma that kind of brought you in, you know, kind of goes back to my point about talking with Tommy about Honky Tonk Man. Like, those really guys back in that day, they really elicited that, like, that gut feeling and that reaction. So, I mean, it's, you know, I mean, to not counter your point, you know, you can definitely tell that Dusty and Hogan and Jesse the Body, they took a lot of his stuff. You know, if you look back at some of Hogan's stuff, I mean, he's taken snippets from him. So, you know, that's my thought. Thomas?
Absolutely. I went back and looked today, and I didn't realize how many times he had held a belt. And, I mean, he held the WWF Heavyweight Championship, the NWA Heavyweight Championship, the NWA Florida Championship twice, the NWA Florida Tag Team Championship once with Ox Baker, the NWA Southern Heavyweight Champ. He was the CWA Heavyweight Champ, IWA Heavyweight Champ. He was the Brass Knuckles NWA Champ four times. And then he held the NWA World Tag Team Champs with Pat Patterson, which I never knew. And then you think that about it, and it's something that he's more known for to, like, the younger fans, I guess, if they really looked into it, was he was the first wrestler that really tried to unionize the wrestlers. And it didn't work, and it probably cost him his career because it kind of blackballed him with McMahon after that, and McMahon didn't want anything to do with him after that.
Yeah, and from talking to the Phantom, a lot of the things that he remembers about his first inkling for seeing Billy Graham was the karate Billy Graham, where he came back and he was thin and, you know, had the little run with Backlund afterwards where he smashed the belt. And after he smashed the belt, that's when they created that big green belt, the one that I really liked that Hogan got off the Sheik, that only Backlund, the Sheik, and Hogan had. I really liked that belt. I thought it was sharp for the time. But the belt before that, the one with the eagle on it, he had smashed that at ringside, and there was a storyline out of that. But that karate Billy Graham, that's the one that's it's a little tough for me, that one. But I like Billy Graham with the bleach blonde hair, Billy Graham and the tie-dye, and then I like Billy Graham, the good guy, when he came back in the NWA and the WWF with the tie-dye and the goatee with the stripe in it that Steiner stole from. Don't forget, Big Papa Pump stole a lot of the
That's
Billy
right,
Graham.
Yeah.
So there's been a lot of guys that have stole from him. And, you know, as far as when they put out the DVD about him, it was called 20 Years Too Soon. And if you think about it, the way Sports Entertainment was, he was 20 years too soon. Because
yes, I agree.
He was made for being live in Technicolor. He's on your cable station. He's on your satellite station. He's on your laser beam station. All that stuff we used to say.
Yeah, man. You know, he's running 19 miles a day. He's swimming the Atlantic Ocean, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, that's just a great promo, man.
Yeah.
Like, to come up with something like that and to nail it too, you know?
Yeah.
And it just flowed, you know? So that, I mean, he was one of a kind for sure.
If somebody's never really seen any of the Billy Graham stuff, the two things that I say to watch is watch any clip when he was in the WWF, any of the promos for, you know, the shows coming to Boston, Philly, gotten any of those promos, awesome. With the Grand Wizard, fantastic. And then the program that he had with Kevin Sullivan, where they brought him back as a heel and he was in the karate gimmick, and he had to go, you know, purge himself. He did the whole Jesus of Nazareth thing, tied himself in the desert for 40 days and 40 nights. And when he came back, he came back as the tie-dyed Billy Graham with the goatee dyed and the whole thing, and had the battle with Sullivan. It was ultimately, like, you know, good versus evil kind of thing. And a really good, it's on YouTube. You got to watch it in segments to get the whole run, but man, good stuff. Just the whole thing where, you know, definitely an innovator, and, you know, I don't want to get too long winded on him, but he is one of my favorites, probably top five in for what I like. So with that being said, we had also another passing this week. I mean, if we want to talk about Hall of Famers, whether these guys are Hall of Famers or not, these two guys, Billy Graham, certified Hall of Famer, and this other guy, Jim Brown, certified Hall of Famer, innovator, activist, held the rushing record for how many years until, you know, Walter Payton came along. Tom, Ed, you care to add with some knowledge on the life of Jim Brown?
Ed?
I'm going to say, you know, I mean, for a guy to retire, what was it? He played for, what, 9 years?
Yep.
Or 10? To get that rushing record, I mean, the tackling back in those days was very different than what the tackling is now. I mean, it was true violence back then. It was by any means necessary. That was, you know, back right after kind of like the Night Train Lane kind of, you know, I mean, Night Train Lane was the first to develop that forearm shiver to the head, you know. And to see what Jim Brown did and, you know, when he went, you know, and to see how he ended it, you know, he went over and he filmed the Dirty Dozen and said, yeah, I'm done, you know. And, man, that took a lot of cojones. And, you know, I mean, and you think about it, I mean, he was an even better lacrosse player than what he was a football player. Can you just imagine that, how dominant he would have been out on the lacrosse field if it was, like, one of the major four? I can't even imagine. And, like, you know, like to say, oh, you know, like, are these guys, would these guys be just as good now? Or, you know, do you think they'd kind of take a couple steps back? No, because these guys were the best when they were then. And then if you put them on a training table now, some weightlifting type stuff and that type of thing now with running and all the sports medicine stuff that we have now, these guys would be just as dominant or possibly even more, and their careers would have been longer. So that's my take. Thomas?
The guy is probably, in my opinion, the top three or four running backs in the history of the league. I mean,
I think he's number one.
10 seasons, and the guy, he had 126 touchdowns in his career, 120 rushing and 20 receiving. And he had over 2,499 receiving yards, so he could do both. The guy could run you over or could run by you. He was just a complete package. And then
yes, he was.
To retire at 30 years old and to go to Hollywood, and he succeeded there. He had 52 acting credits to his in his resume. I mean, and they were, like you said, he was in the Dirty Dozen. He was the one I remember him in when I was a kid was Running Man. I believe he was Icebox, I think. But I'm Gonna Get You, Sucker, Mars Attacks. I mean, those are movies. I used to always remember. And then Ice Station Zebra is probably the first one I remember him in. But three-time league MVP. He was a Pro Bowler 9 times. I mean, the guy's just a legend. It's just a big loss. And he did just as much off the field. I mean, he was such a community guy in Cleveland. I mean, it's a really big loss.
Well, I think he was a nationwide type of a guy for what he would give back. You know, like he really put his money where his mouth was. Like, was his home life perfect? Certainly was not. So, you know, I mean, but, you know, that's what it was, you know. I mean, but he really tried to really bridge that gap, you know, with blacks and whites. I mean, he kind of saw it as he really tried to kind of like bring peace, and that should be very well respected.
Now, the tie between the two guys is it seems like that they were very active in trying to make things better for the sport that they were in and, you know, what they were trying to accomplish. And it didn't seem to always work out as well as, you know, they had hoped for. You know, I know Jim Brown was always flying the flag for activism, and you know, that's what I remember him most about, was, you know, his, you know, take on pop culture and you know, I don't know how much he was involved with the NFL union and the players, but I know that he was big with the activist movement for, you know, black people and I remember a couple NFL commercials that they had with him in it, talking about that way back, way before diversity was even like a norm.
Yeah.
So, you know, just to tie everything together, just huge losses for know, both, if I could say both are a sport, you know, it's just one of those days that, you know, it's something to talk about. It's something that I hope people that have never seen them probably get involved and going on YouTube and, you know, doing a deep dive and checking out some of the stuff, you know, because once these legends are gone, you know, it's like they're gone. You'll never see them again. So with that being said, we're going to shift gears again. We're going to give it over to Tom for his segment on this week for Fantasy Player of the Week. Tom, what do you got?
Well, this week, hopefully I'm going to do a little better this week because last week my picks weren't – I mean, Valdez, I had my pitcher of the week was Framber Valdez. He pitched awesome today. He pitched a complete game, had 20 points just today. So he was okay, but Otani did terrible in the field. I mean, he did good pitching, but a lot of leagues, like the league I'm in, you either have to have him as a pitcher or you have to decide what you're going to do during – the beginning of the week if you're going to have him as a pitcher or a hitter, and you can't have him as both. So that was if you had him as a pitcher, you did well. But this week I'm going with hold on a minute, I have it written here. Oh, here we go. My fantasy hitter of the week is going to be Ronald Acuna from the Atlanta Braves. He's got seven games. The guy is almost hitting 400 right now on the season. He's got seven games this week versus the Dodgers and the Phillies. And the Dodgers just put two of their pitchers, their starting pitchers, on the disabled list. They're bringing up a couple rookies to pitch this week, so I think he's going to feast on them. And the Phillies pitching is hit or miss, so I think he's going to have a big week. My pitcher of the week is going to be Luis Castillo from Seattle. He has two starts, and they're both against Oakland and Pittsburgh, and those guys can't hit their way out of a paper bag right now. So I think he could get two wins on the season.
So, Tom, did I see it right? Was there some kind of incident with MLB where they were having somebody stand by the dugout and the umpires had to, I don't know if it was like they were,
they're friends. They were just actually former teammates, and they were just doing, it was actually with the Red Sox. It was Red Sox and Phillies, and it was a former Red Sox player. They were just having a standoff to see who was going to stay on the field right out to be the last person to leave the field after the national anthem. And they wouldn't leave. And the umpire ended up ejecting, I believe, the guy from the Red Sox. And it was nothing malintent. They were just being goofballs and it was nothing major. Just an example of Major League Baseball being a no fun league, I guess you'd say it.
Yeah. So I guess all the baseball purists were throwing the, stones with these guys make millions of dollars and why are they acting like kids and blah 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 blah. Yeah. So my rule of thumb, I know this is going to ruffle a lot of feathers, but I was telling the Phantom, meet somebody and that's their favorite sport, baseball, they're probably not gonna be, I'm probably not gonna be friends with them because usually it doesn't work out well for me. It just doesn't. Everybody that I've known that baseball is their favorite sport, and they end up being a turkey down the line. So draw your own conclusions. You can cross certain names off the list. So if it's you, you know I'm talking about you. So here we go, full circle. We're back to the hockey playoffs. NHL, a lot of fun. How about that Matthew Tkachuk, huh? He's like, they're calling him the King Rat now. That's his new nickname. So some epic stuff. They're up 2-0, two overtime games against the team that I had picked to win the whole thing, Carolina Hurricanes. I know it's not done, but man, it's some epic hockey to watch. I mean, been watching the whole thing now, and it's like some crazy, crazy moments. Nothing against Carolina, but here they go again. Freddie Anderson plays the first game. Rod Brindamore says they're going to sit him because it was too much of a grind on him. Look what happens. You got to roll. Once you start doing the flip-flopping, not a good thing. Not a good thing. And on the flip side of that, Vegas is up 1-0. So if Florida can get by Carolina, I think they're going to win the whole thing. I really do. I think the way they're playing, you can't hate on them. Tom, Ed, what do you got?
Ed?
Man, I'm telling you, those two overtime games, Tkachuk, I mean, you can't. How can you beat that guy, man? seriously, what? There was like 12 seconds left in that fourth overtime, and he puts it in. I mean, he plays really well on the clutch, you know, and I think that it's, you know, I mean, if I remember correctly, I mean, Florida won the President's Trophy last year. They got rid of some of those finesse guys, just kind of step up, got in, kind of grinding, you know,
because that's what playoff hockey is. What's that? One trade. They made one trade. And look at one trade, look how that's like epic. Epic what they did.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's huge. Finish your thought.
No, I just think that I think it's just good hockey, you know. And Carolina is not, I mean, they're not playing bad, you know. I mean, they are out there competing really hard. So I mean, any games to go into overtime, there you go. I mean, two overtime games. Thomas.
Well, first of all, Matthew Tkachuk's made me a believer. I got to give a shout out to Butchie's Overtime Challenge, John Butchergrass on Twitter. He has a contest for every overtime game in the playoffs where you can pick the guy who scores a winning goal. And if you do, he picks five people and they win t-shirts. And I have one right here on, so I'm repping. And my pick was Matthew Tkachuk. So
nice.
I got to say, and I'm a believer. If you see in the background, I'm now sporting a Florida Panthers John Van Beesbrook jersey up on the thing. So, but in seriousness, their forecheck is just so relentless, and they wear you down until you make a mistake. And Bobrovsky's playing so well, they can go and force that forecheck a little harder, a little more, because the way he's standing on his head. I mean, he's vintage Bobrovsky right now. I mean, he's phenomenal. And then with the Vegas is just so deep. They just wear you down. I mean, they won today, so they're now up, I believe, 2-0 on Dallas, and they just grind on you and they wear you down. And I'm happy. I actually picked them to make the finals, but I'm happy for Bruce Cassidy because I think he got a raw deal here.
And that's without the defensive juggernaut, the guy that I think is the Selke Trophy winner, Phil Kessel. That's without him even in the lineup. Big Phil, hey, he's up there pounding hot dogs, watching from the press box, getting paid. I mean, you know he's coming back another season. If that's going to be his contract, that's him in a nutshell. He can practice, he can shoot pucks, can do what he wants. They throw him in the lineup, he'll probably get two. Who knows? you got to respect the Panthers for this. For guys that are hockey purists, not like those baseball purists, but hockey purists, you got to like the teams that get after it. They're not playing a finesse game. They're playing a blue-collar, sandpaper game.
Yeah, put the body on somebody, man.
Yep. Yeah. Get a stick in there, let them know you're there. The whole deal. Right. I heard they're driving an ambulance around out in the parking lot. Trying to make some noise. Yeah, putting bounties on people. The whole deal.
My question is, now, what year is the Chevy Nova that he's driving around in outside? I forget.
It's not a Nova. It's like a Le Mans or something like that. It's like a Pontiac Le Mans.
I mean, what did that dog do anyway? Come on.
Yeah. He saved Charlestown from the 1938 flood.
Yeah, well, you know what? You can bleep him, right?
Yeah. But yeah, as far as the way they're playing, it's fantastic. I mean, that if they win the whole thing and they play that style, it opens up a format. I'd rather see a team play like that and win the whole thing than play the trap like Jersey and win all kinds of cups and slow the game down. I'd rather see some hard nose, you got to deserve it to earn it type of playoff hockey. Take the finesse out of it. Save that for the regular season. You know, we'll put your big boy pants on when the playoffs come and all the stiffs can go home. But Edmonton's out again. Toronto's out again. I mean, you can score 60 in the regular season, but what's it getting you? I mean, I think at the end of the day, the thing that Florida does well is they're like a family. Yeah, the way they play, it seems like everybody is on the same page. It doesn't seem like anybody's playing up here and telling everybody they're down here. Seems like everybody's on that same level. They're all rowing the boat at the same pace. And thoughts about the Tkachuk overtime thing where he points to get off the ice. What do you think about that on enemy?
I love it. And you want to know why? Look, man, it's playoff hockey. You shake hands when it's done. If you're going to get people stirred up, get underneath their skin, man. You know, put that burr underneath the saddle and give it a good whack, you know? Come on, man. Like, it's playoff hockey. Like, like you said, it's put your big boy pants on time. It's like it's supposed to be that internal puck clock. You got to have your head up on a swivel because it's coming. So I love it.
If I like it because it's going to get somebody off their game. Somebody's going to piss somebody off, and rather than playing their defensive assignment or something, they're going to come rushing at him, charging at him, trying to hurt him or take him out, and it's going to leave somebody's going to be open and somebody's going to be out of position. It's going to help them. So I have no problem with it.
So, fellas, we're winding down. We got a little bit of time left. We're going to do our usual last segment. Tom, what do you got for album pick of the week?
My pick of the week this week, and I've got to cover something because it's a little – I don't want to – it's got to keep this PG, you know.
Good show. Good show.
The album cover has some – it's showing some boobs. So, so it's Jane's Addiction, Nothing Shocking, awesome CD. It came out in, I believe it was 1986.
Can you move those fingers out of the way? I couldn't see that.
It came out in 1988. Got some awesome songs. Standing in the Shower, Pigs and Zen, Idiot's Rule, Mountain Songs, probably my favorite Jane's Addiction song. Jane Says, Summertime Rules, I mean, just phenomenal CD. And looking into it a little bit, doing a little research, there's a lot of controversy behind the scenes with this. It was Perry Farrell was being a jackass behind the scenes, and he demanded 50% of the band's publishing royalties for writing the lyrics. Plus, he wanted another quarter of what was left for writing the music. And that was the band actually broke up for a couple weeks before Warner Brothers stepped in. But he won. He got what he wanted. And the other three guys in the band only ended up with like 12.5% of everything between the three of them. I've split. I mean, they each got 12.5, but I mean, I didn't realize any of that stuff when I was looking into this, but I found that pretty interesting.
Ed, thoughts?
I have to agree. Mountain Song and Jane Says, those are my two favorites off that album, man. You know, I mean, I think coming down a mountain, I think great warm-up song, you know, pregame. You know what I mean? Like, it just with, you know, that, like, the guitar riff and that type of thing. You know, I really like it, man. You know, and then Jane Says, it's just a well-written song, you know? You know, I always have to agree with the lyrics on what it's saying, but like, it's just, you know, it's a very well-written song, and I like it. So, you know, back on you, homie.
So, thoughts on that album, more the band itself. That band's always been a mess. It's been a hot mess. They've tried to reunite a bunch of times. It's been on again, off again. There's been drugs. This guy can play. This guy can't play. It's just been such a mess with that band. They were around in that Chili Peppers era where that style of music was starting to kind of gravitate a little bit. And it seems like the Chili Peppers could keep their shit together, drugs and all, and they couldn't. So it always kind of makes you wonder, like, why can a band be functional with drugs and another band can't? And is there more to it than just that? Like you were saying about the Perry Farrell thing, he's an odd dude. He's an odd dude. You know what I mean? They've asked him to be in other bands, and he's like, he has like high demands. He's not Robert Plant. You know what I mean? It's not, you're not, you've been in one band that if you're not into that kind of music, nobody's ever heard of you before. You know, you ask some 20 something who Perry Farrell is, they'll probably think you're talking about Farrell from, what's his name there? From Gwen Stefani's stuff there, or the whatever.
Wait, I know what you're talking about.
Yeah. So, yeah. I mean, it's a lost thing, but back to the CD, fantastic. Fantastic CD. Definitely, if you're going to buy one, that's the one to buy. There's a couple other tweeners here and there, but that's the one. If you're going to own one, that's the one to buy. So before we leave, Tom, we're going to finish with you. Weekly shout outs, people that we love, people that we care about, we're thinking about.
Got a couple. I got a couple tonight.
Go ahead. Take it away.
Yeah, I got a couple. I want to send this one out to two of my athletes. One was Mina. She killed it today. She did an awesome job in a triathlon. Sub 8 minute mile. And then my boy Rad, he did great. First triathlon ever today, man. Big time stuff for him. Personal. It was a personal kind of vendetta for him. Some tragedy happened about a year ago on Tuesday, and to basically pick yourself up by the bootstraps and just put your foot one foot in front of the other and handle his business like he did today. Super proud of him. And then last but not least, Oddball, thinking about you, bro.
Tom, quick one. We probably got about a minute left.
Oh, I'm going to keep it light on this one. I'm just going to give a shout out to all the dads that jumped on the grenade and took their kids to go see Taylor Swift this weekend. You took one for the team. Not that I know anyone, wink, wink, but that's just a light one. I got nothing else.
Oh, in the rain and everything. That's
the person
brutal.
I know went on Friday, so they actually survived the rain. But
oh, no, thank you. No.
Not my cup of tea.
No, definitely not. We're talking about Jane's addiction, and you bring up Taylor Swift. It's just it leaves a bad taste in your mouth, like you smelled somebody's fart, but nobody wants to admit it who it was.
Hey, we've got to expand our audience. You know what?
it doesn't mean the truth doesn't hurt either. The truth is the truth. I mean, it's not lying if it's the truth.
Nope. But I will say though that she from all experts, she puts on a killer show and she loves her fans.
Okay, yeah.
There you go. That's my throwaway.
What I heard, she did over 45 songs the other night. So
yeah.
So we gotta wrap this up.
If you don't like it, you can eat a whole bag of Richards. How's that?
So with that being said, we're gonna end on that note. So we'll see you next week for big episode 15. It's probably like an anniversary episode. So be ready for a special
coming for you, brother.
Special guest.